episode of What You Doin' Podcast. My name is Matt. Today I'm sitting down with Binary and Charlotte to talk about their game now on Kickstarter, Celestial Bodies Titan Edition. Celestial Bodies is a very exciting mech-based tabletop game. And as I say in the interview, I'm shocked we got to this many episodes without getting some sort of mech-adjacent media on the podcast. If it sounds interesting as you're listening, the game has roughly 2 weeks left on Kickstarter by the time you're hearing this. It has fully funded, so get over there, pledge, back it, do whatever you got to do. There's digital and physical versions available. And I'll note, if you bought the California Wildlife Relief Bundle on Itch a little while ago, you do have the previous version of the game available if you want to check it out and see if that's something you want to support to get a physical version. And I'll say the Kickstarter has new zines that you can pledge to get digital and physical as well. I want to thank Binary and Charlotte for making time to sit down and talk with me about their game. But all that out of the way, let's get into it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to What You Doin' Podcast. My name is Matt. Today, I'm sitting down with Binary and Charlotte to talk about Celestial Bodies Titan Edition. Say hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
Perfect. I love the wave, and then like, it's an audio podcast. Hang on. I do it all the time. I'm really excited to sit down. I'm going to be honest. When I saw the campaign go live, I was like, I should talk to them about the podcast. I should talk to them on the podcast. I'm already so busy with the podcast. I should talk to them on the podcast. I'm already so busy. And I did it like a week, and then I was just like, I got to do it. I got to do it. Busy's a good way to be. So, today we're talking about, I guess, the final version of Celestial Bodies. That's a thing that will, that's a question I wrote down. Final this time.
If we add any more pages to this book, I think, probably be illegal.
We're going to have to bind it in a circus tent if we had more pages.
Yeah.
Well, that's when you make a nice box set, right? And you like you separate like the setting and the rules, and you gotta get fancy with it. And then it doubles in price, so it's obviously a really good idea.
That's true.
Separate the setting and the rules. I guess we could do
This is too early. It's too early to start diving into hot takes. I think people should get a little funkier with their printing layouts, but that's me. I don't have to pay for it, so I can say whatever the hell I want.
I was going to say, okay, you want to pay?
I don't know what it costs, so I can just say whatever the hell I want.
I'll give you a hint.
The base goal for Celestial Bodies covers production, and we barely get paid from it, if at all.
Yeah.
The $30,000 covers making printing out the books and paying for editors and other writers and stuff, and paying for fulfillment, and nothing. It doesn't go to us at all. Anything after that and any extra books we sell will go to us, but that base number is just making the book real.
This isn't to say we won't like eventually make money from that base number, but like it won't immediately make money.
A print run of 1,000, so we can do offset printing. Yes. But so there'll be extra books because there's not 1,000 backers unless something happens, in which case we'll have to reevaluate our priorities. But it is cheaper to print over 1,000 anyway. It gets cheaper and cheaper. But yeah, that we set the base goal as low as possible to get the book like done, and that was $30,000.
As low as possible to get it done and like not BSing costs such that we lose money.
Yeah,
like even at that price, just fine. Like
done with a responsible thing. I try to watch myself, but I do it as a joke sometimes. Just guy that has no idea how it works. Well, why don't they do it this way? And sometimes I do that, and then I immediately catch myself and I say this. I have no idea how it works, but why don't they? And it's like, hey, I'm sure they've thought of it. There's a reason. There's a reason they don't do it that way.
We did have a box set in mind at some point in the process of doing this, and then we looked at the realities of doing that and decided against. But,
maybe just the zines. We can have stickers as a stretch goal if people get spicy with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I was talking to, I'll finish this and we'll throw the intros. I was talking to Andy from Panion, and we were talking about Kickstarter stuff. And, you know, he was talking about like how people get themselves into trouble with Kickstarters and they offer all of these things for fulfillment and whatever. And I was like, it's because they didn't think about it. You know, they offered a box set and they didn't consider that that meant you would have this book and the box. And then at some point in the process, those three things have to come together and then get shipped out again. And I'm like, there's a lot of logistics that I think you just don't think about until it's in front of you. And
yeah,
that is exactly right.
That's exactly what happened, actually. But before
we were talking about like, fulfillment. And yeah, like he was the one who was like, are you sure?
Never mind.
It's like, no, not that sure.
We are not that sure. I was like, yeah, I trust you on this. You've done a million Kickstarters. We are deleting the box set immediately.
you just go over to the design doc. No, delete it.
More or less.
We just deleted the reward on the Kickstarter. We're like, never mind. It's fine.
Let's get the intros before I forget. So whoever wants to go first, introduce your name, your pronouns, what you do, what you got going on, your role in the game, and whatever else you want to share with the class.
Sure, I'll go first. I am Binar Star. It's my real name, he, him. I've made a few games you may have heard of. Apocalypse Frame is the big one. Valiant Horizon is the real you might have heard of that. Celestial Bodies.
I'm Charlotte. My pronouns are you have to guess.
Choose wisely.
Choose wisely. I have made Daisy Chainsaw and Celestial Bodies. I do a lot of art and cover art for Snow's games. So like Songbirds and the new version of Dot Dungeon. And I just did my first layout commission for Sean Richard, who makes DCC stuff with Orbital Intelligence. I hope I pronounced his name right. I'm getting over a cold, so I'm going to be coughing a little bit.
Oh, that's okay.
Like, yeah. Sorry.
Anyone who wants to hear the coughing in full HD, I'll lean closer into the mic.
Just get one really good one, and then that's a thing I'll sell separate on the Patreon. We're just like, yeah, it's this is the cough edit. Listen, people are out there, and I'm not going to say that they're weird, but they have their proclivities, and that's great, and I support them. And
make some money off of it.
Yeah, in much the same way. Listen, it'll be $3, and that is, you know, it's what it is. So coming back from that. So Celestial Bodies, the TTRPG, anybody that knows me, knows that I'm a real mech sicko. I love mechs. I love giant robots. I love small robots. And I remember not that long ago getting really excited about Apocalypse Frame, and then even less time ago getting really excited about the original versions of Celestial Bodies. So, as I maybe left in the edit in the intro, when I saw the Kickstarter version go up, I was very, very excited and very excited to have y'all on the podcast, though I was very, I'm busy. I waffled, but I pulled the trigger. And so I'm excited to yell about mechs for the first time on this podcast. Honestly, surprisingly, I'm surprised it took us this long. I got to a card game before I got to a mech game, and that's a little surprising. I guess here at the start, talk us through where did Celestial Bodies come from, kind of at an overarching level. You know, what's tell me all of the sordid, terrible design history secrets.
Well, you can start with that one.
Yeah, I'll say Celestial Bodies was my idea in 2021 or 2022, or it was a long time ago. It was, and I originally came up with the concept of. One of my friends posted in a Discord server about Mouse Ritter and the inventory grid and posted like a long in-depth idea of like how you can use this for maybe a tabletop game. And then I was like, I want to do this for a mech game. And then I kind of sat on it for a while. One of my friends came up with the name Lamplighter probably in like 2022 and, he likes to bring it up as he's a contributor to Daisy, or not Daisy, contributor to Celestial Bodies. He also contributed to Daisy Chainsaw morally, with moral support.
He kept me from murdering during it, so that he contributed morally.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just sat on it for a while, and then at some point in between then and now, Binary commissioned me for all the art of Valiant Horizon, and
Yes.
which is how we like met mostly. And then at the end of that, I was like, "Hey, do you want to do a collab? Here's my ideas," and we shared our ideas. And I was like, "Okay, we decided to work on Celestial Bodies," and I had like the basic idea of it and was like, "Okay, this is the things we have to do is it has to be grid. The grid has to exist in some capacity. It was just before it was the D66, and it has to
Yes.
be GMless. I really wanted a mech game that did not require a GM to play because I always feel like it's really hard to find GMs for things, and I like the idea of a mech game you can just pick up and play by yourself that isn't like entirely journaling, but like actually has crunch to it.
Yes.
So we started with that, and then Binary came up with the 2D6 grid that we put everything on, which is perfect. It is the most perfect thing I'll ever create in my entire life. And it went through a few iterations. Like, there was at one point a brief, probably 30-minute period where Binary was like, "Okay, you roll to hit this, and then you roll to do damage or something like that." Like, you did multiple rolls,
Yeah.
and we were like,
Well, initially, you had in the design document, like, use the Daisy Chainsaw die. So I was like,
"Oh,
okay, I guess we can try that or something. And then eventually, we were just like, fuck
we're
this.
just yeah
Let's
we were
just do the
like
grid.
we're just gonna do one roll, and then you use whatever evasion and accuracy and stats to manipulate that roll, and then past that, you don't have to roll like multiple times because that's ridiculous. You already rolled, and so it makes things a little snappier to not roll to hit and then hit two damage and also other stuff. And then it just kind of grew from there. We did the first version of the book that was about 80 something pages released on Itch. We did that in a month. And it was another period where Binary was unemployed, so that's how we got it done in a month.
The Delver crew.
The day we launched it on Itch was the day of his new job.
You're like, I'm done. There you go.
Was one of the most insane days of that year. It was just like doing like orientation shit while watching the number go up.
It was pretty funny. Well, I remember because when we launched it on Itch, we did like a soft launch. So we, put the page up, didn't post about it, and we were just like, "Okay, if someone finds it, they can look at it or whatever." We put up like a low number of community copies because they're like, "Well, who's gonna find this?" I woke up and it was $1,000.
The
I
sickos always find it. They
was
know.
emailed that day.
Goal at 1,000, by the way. So we hit the goal about 4 hours before we actually launched it.
And that was pretty funny. And then I later found out that there was a dedicated thread for it on the Lancer Discord.
Hell yeah.
That they were like talking about it there. And I was like, "That's pretty funny. I like that."
Hell yeah. Mech sickos always
There was
know.
yeah, there were just like 10 dedicated sickos who were just like glued to this, watching it, waiting for it to launch,
Yeah,
apparently.
someone
Love
messaged me and they were like, "I'm so glad I saw this before I woke up, like the night before, because I wouldn't have gotten the $200 tier if I hadn't." I was like, "Oh,
Yes.
okay." Oh, another funny fact about that $200 tier is that we actually oversold it because two people basically bought it the last slot at the same time, like within the same minute, and it's just gave both of them. So we had it let set to five or four or something. It was four, and we sold five. Okay, it was five, and we sold six.
Yes. It's just handling for that is just like, I guess I'll sell another.
Yeah,
Why not?
they had to have
So
bought
for
it
a
when
while
it
it was
was
at
at like
like
30
six
cents.
sold of five capacity.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, and we were just like, "How did this occur?" So we went and checked, and it was just like, "Oh, they just bought it at the same time." Okay, why not? What are we
Yes.
gonna do? Tell someone they can't have it after they just bought it? Like,
Yeah, that's that's not gonna be. That's not worth the problem. That's not worth the negativity.
Like figuring out how to do refunds on Itch, I don't want to find that out.
It's probably not good. It's probably not easy.
It's less bad than you might think. You can just ask Itch and they'll do it. Apparently. But nonetheless, we weren't gonna.
It's like whatever. Fine. And then we spent the next year getting it to the current Titan edition.
Yep.
Which was a lot of Binary working on it and a lot of me dying from my day job constantly. And also not having internet for a period of time. Because I lived in the woods.
So that was a 200-page edition on that 80-page game.
Which I actually printed it all out with a printer, and it's in a binder next to me right now.
I love the visual image, and I'm sure none of this is what happened, but I love the visual image of you, like, for whatever reason, going into the woods and then coming out months later, and it's like, hey, Binary, how's the game going? And you're like, it's great, I wrote all this.
And no, it's that's... like, That's pretty accurate. That's about right.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything else going on, so I wrote
this. It's like, yeah, I wrote construction rules. I hope you're cool with that. A thing conversation with you at some point.
Yeah, and there's a lot of conversations with me in Binary where I'm like, what if we added this? And he's like, oh my god, no. And then I'm like, okay, but what if we did it anyway?
but whatever.
And then randomly I'll be like, hey, I wrote up the mission Hexflowers. What do you think? And it was good. That was a good addition. A lot of our conversations are, there's this GIF called Clown to Clown that says like Clown to Clown Communication. And it has two clowns with like, they're thoughts connected, and we use that a lot because we'll send each other the exact same idea at the same time, or like have the same thought at the same time without like discussing it first. We just communicate on a psychic level about celestial bodies, which is great and very funny. And then we have to race to see who posts the gift first.
True.
I love it. I love how many, like, how many amazing games, because I think a lot is made of like the solo dev, the solo designer of just like, oh yeah, working on this myself, banging on. But I love the energy of the collaboration, you know, because it's so much funnier when it's two weirdos that are just like, look at the weird thing we made together.
Well, beyond that, it's also like the weird constraints both of us bring to it, where it's like, it has to be GM-less, it has to do this, it has to do that, and it's like, all right, we're going to make it fit in all these boxes somehow. It's going to work.
And it's also good in the way of, so you'd think that a 400-page book by the end of it would be like a lot of extra shit, but it's mostly just lore. But it helps us keep us from adding like everything except the kitchen sink into it as rules. Yes. Like the, I forget the word for it. Add too many rules to a tabletop game.
Like bloat.
Bloat. Yes, bloat. It avoids bloat. Because there's tons of stuff we could have added that we did not add. I probably would have added if I was left to my own devices.
This is the thing, like, as much as it is currently 270 pages, like, there's not that many, like, actual rules. Mm-hmm. Like, I think 130 pages of that are just factions. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of it is just stuff. It's not, like, all these rules you have to keep track of, really.
And you don't have to look at the factions until you roll them up on the encounters.
Yes.
I gave it a good once-over yesterday, and I was like, I saw the page count, and I was like, all right, here we go. And then I was like, wait, I'm already to factions? Hang on. Where did I miss a...
It's a pretty breezy read for as long as it is.
Yeah.
And it's easy to keep track of the rules in your head as compared to... You don't really have to look up everything all the time once you know... Like, when you know how your build works, you don't have to be like, oh, how does this interact with this? How does this interact with that? You just kind of can just think, remember it, which is nice. And you can also... build a character on a napkin with a pencil or a crayon at a restaurant, which I haven't done, but that's a thing where I'm like, I'm glad we can have a game where you don't need a bunch of extra stuff. You can just make a character.
This was one of my big constraints going into it. It's like, I need everything as defined by that grid as possible. Like, I don't want extra, like, pilot traits. I don't want any of this other shit. It needs to be on that fucking grid.
The only thing that's not on the grid is the actual, like, attributes of the pilot.
Yes.
That you spent.
There's some pilot stuff on the grid, but it's very minimal by comparison. And, like, any more complex stuff, because there is more complex stuff, you kind of have to opt into.
And that's a good problem to have, to say, like, I want more complexity, and so I'm going to take that on as a intentional choice.
As long as it's an opt-in, that's a you problem, not a me problem.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to do that, sure, go for it.
Listen, I added rules if you want to have psychic powers, but those are over there, and you gotta want to take that. You gotta want that.
Yeah, that's literally
it. That, sure, but also they're over there. But yeah, when I read the book, I was like, did I miss a page? Did I miss a subheading? Because you get through it quick, which is a compliment for a book that big. Let's. I want to talk about the meat of the game. I have a lot of things written down about the game, but I want to talk about, surprisingly, I want to talk about mechs. Shocking. I find with mech TTRPGs, mech fiction and whatever, there's usually some really specific influence that people are pulling from, right? So like, Beam Saber is pulling from different works than Armorous Stir and, you know, Apocalypse Frame and all of these are, and maybe there's some overlap, but they're pulling from a lot of different data points. For Celestial Bodies, what's kind of your mech like reading list? This is great. I'm excited about what I'm about to hear. This is exciting. You know, what's kind of your, what's your touchstones? What's your inspiration points?
I don't know. I actually don't really consume. We talked about this in the Weekly Scroll podcast as well, where I don't really watch a lot of mech anime. Like, I've watched Gurren Lagann, I've watched Evangelion, the Gundam Witch from Mercury, but that was way after Celestial Bodies. That was last, a couple months ago. Like, I don't watch a lot of mech anime. I don't consume a lot of mech media. I like mechs. I don't read a lot of mech tabletop games. I actually don't know if I have read any mech tabletop game in depth other than Battle Sentry, maybe BattleTech. But that really was like years and years ago and had no marked influence on Celestial Bodies. It just kind of the inspiration is the primordial soup of my brain going, what do I want to play with mechs? What do I want to do with my play dolls? When I play mech dolls, what do I want? Which is how I do most of my games, is less of what do I want it to emulate or what do I want it to like seem like, and more like, what do I want to play when I play these things? Like, same with Daisy. I don't watch a lot of magical girl media. I love magical girls, but I don't watch a lot of TV in general, so like watching a bunch of anime for inspiration was kind of not something I wanted to do. I was like, what do I want when I picture a magical girl? What do I want to come out of it? Same with Celestial Bodies. When I picture mechs and I picture playing with mechs, what do I want to play with? And that's that's kind of where that came from. Instead of trying to emulate or derive inspiration from something specific, I was just like, what do I want to play? Because it's a tabletop game, you know? It's a game and not a TV show.
No, yep, I dig so, that. I like that's very funny.
That's why I was
makes
laughing.
A lot of sense, but also that's why I was, like, very funny.
Laughing when you were asking that question.
Yeah, that's why we're just like, oh yeah, you're not going to get a good answer out of this. For my part, I have a little more than that. I've seen a few Gundams. Like, I've seen IBO. I've seen Witch from Mercury. I've seen a little bit of a few others. As far as, like, games, Front Mission is actually my big reference.
It felt like this was very Armored Core Front Mission inspired.
Yes, Armored Core is the other one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other things. BattleTech, of course, a little bit. Sure. I mean, here or there. Like, I don't think those are as foundational as the other two, but, you know, it's there. It lives there. I was going to say, the big one for Apocalypse for him, actually, was none of those, but it was Xenoblade Chronicles X. That is, that's like, out of left field.
I like, that's a funny answer to me, that it's just like, not any of the things that you would think. It's a mech video game that most people probably wouldn't pull up in their, in 10 guesses for a mech video. This is especially this one is why that, I did the podcast. This is it.
Especially one that was like five people played because it was on the Wii U and that's it.
It's gonna remaster. They're re-releasing it. I can't believe it.
I'm so ready for it.
Those five people.
Those five people are fucking eating good.
Those five people are so ready. They can finally turn off their Wii U's.
Like literally, that's why I own a Wii U still.
I got one. I'm not even kidding. You can barely see it. It's right there though.
Excellent.
I bought there it 2 weeks ago.
What a time. Just right before the last game holdout. Like
my claim to fame. I got an Ouya in 2023 and I got a Wii U in 2025.
You got an Ouya in 2023? How?
A friend bought it off eBay and gifted it to me. Because,
oh my God. Well
because
done.
In my hubris, I said, so I'm a streamer also, and I was talking about the Ouya at one point, and I was like, the Ouya was a great idea. It was just like 6 years too early. I'm like, if you launch the Ouya now, if you launch something like the Ouya now, it would clean up and it would be amazing. And so what he did was we talked about it later in Discord. What he did was he bought an Ouya. He put it in a box. He printed out the quote because I have it right there on my wall. He printed out me saying it's me in the year of our Lord 2023 getting an Ouya and put it in the box and gifted it to me. And I was like, excellent. This, yeah. The some real sicko shit. Just
that's great.
God, that's very. I'm glad I asked that question. I was like asking what inspiration, like what mech things were your inspiration. That's kind of a basic answer. No, that was the best answer that could have been. None.
Normally, it would be a basic answer, but follow up on that though. I have the same principle as Charlotte of I don't like. Aim to emulate something in particular. Mm. Usually it's just kind of like if I do aim to emulate something, I accidentally end up emulating something else that I realized along the way half the time. Like something else just gets pulled in from the soup without me thinking about it.
I did get the Berserk mode of the psychic powers from Evangelion because I thought that would be fun. And that's probably the most overt direct reference to anything in Celestial Bodies that's like actually related to big robot things.
Yeah, if there's an overt reference to anything, it's not because I really wanted to pay homage to it, it's because I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I don't do anything that intentionally
gun, the big fucking gun and the even bigger fucking gun the actually yep. So the even bigger fucking gun spawned from when I was doing layout tests for the very original version of Celestial Bodies. I was doing like headers and stuff and filler text, and one of the headers was big fucking gun, another header was even bigger fucking gun, and everyone who saw it was like, that's gonna be a weapon in the game, right? Like you're gonna have the even bigger fucking gun. And I was like, well, I guess I have to now, like I can't do that.
And well, you committed to it.
I committed to it.
I guess.
It was just a throwaway like line of text, and I was like, "Well, fuck, it has to go in." You know, that's
work. It's how all the best ideas get started, though. Is somebody goes like, "Hey, so that's a thing, right?" And you're like, "I guess, sure,
yeah.
Why not?"
A lot of things work out here.
you mentioned it. You mentioned it earlier, but. I'm excited to dig into it. So the grid, I think, is the most satisfying thing about this game. It is absolutely amazing. I'm just it's one of those bits of design that like is so impressive in the way that it manages to do, like you said, like literally everything in one small accessible piece of visual information that's not numerical. It's just like boop boop, boop there it is, done.
Yep.
You know, how I know you touched a little bit on sort of the genesis of the grid, but how has that sort of, you know, how did that work in design, you know, how did sort of the evolution from, you know, the Mouse Ritter grid to this go?
I ended up looking this up because I was curious just how quick it came together, like, you know, months after the fact. And it was literally just like, hey, Charlotte, I don't know, like, can we just make this like a battleship thing? And Charlotte's like, sure, like, maybe if you hit something you already hit, it's a crit. It's like, bam, that's the whole fucking game.
we were like, Binary said the 6x6 grid, and I was like, okay, that's perfect. We fiddled with the hitbox, like hitting things for like 5 seconds, and then we were just like, hit something you hit, it's a crit, and we were just like, okay, that's how it works. It was very fast. There was not a lot of brain power spent on it. Once it came together, we were just like, oh, this just works. It just works. It just worked.
The main trick at that point was just like tweaking numbers so that it wasn't like stupid. So I did run like a very initial version with my home group where like accuracy was a little too high and weapon damage was a little too low and, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, we refined it after that. And honestly, it was only that one big change. Like, there were like little changes after that, but like...
And once we got the base numbers down, it was not... Yep. Too difficult to stat everything that we wanted to add to it.
Exactly.
Just base it off of what we already had. And another big thing is the shape of the weapons and parts that go on the grid and what they do and what role they fill compared to the other weapons of a similar shape or the same shape or how many squares mm-hmm. this thing takes up versus this thing. And trying to make sure that everything is sort of worth taking at some level.
Mm.
For some build somewhere.
I did have a moment when I was looking at the equipment where I was like, I was looking at it's the assault rifle, and then I think it's the carbine right after, and then the scout rifle. And they're all four squares in different layouts. And I very specifically had a moment where I'm like looking at it, I'm like, okay, so this has like slightly higher damage, but then this has slightly better crit, and then this has slightly better accuracy. And I'm like, okay, so I see the build thing here, because it's, you know, and they're roughly the same shape, or, you know, they're the same number of squares and then slightly different shapes. And so it's like, okay, I'm this is curious.
Yep. There was definitely that kind of thing going around where it's like, I don't want anything to feel like it's the obvious don't take this.
Mm.
Like, I think that's the biggest thing is like everything has to have a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Even if its purpose is it's only one square. And it gives you a thing.
That's a purpose.
Yeah. Well, what's its purpose? It's one extra little thing to fit in there.
It fits a hole. Legitimately, that is a purpose.
I love just the idea of, and I was looking at it a little bit, and I just love the idea of at some point having a mech where it's just the armored core thing, right? Where it's just like, okay. The mech is the whole grid. There's no not hitting this thing. But also, it's armored all to hell. It's got all these weapons. It's got all this stuff. That it's not about, like, can you hit it? It's where are you hitting it? And it's a thing I'll bring up a little bit later. But just, like, it lends a lot of tactical play in a way that doesn't slow down the game. You know, it's not, oh, am I, you know, I got to roll this. I got to, oh, did I hit? Okay. But now I got to roll over 5. And if I roll over 5 now, okay. So now I got to do a check against this, whatever. And it's just all in one thing. But I do, I do love being like, how did you come up with this super brilliant idea? And it's like, I didn't want to try. I didn't want to think very hard about it. It's just like, that works. That's great. That's good.
If they broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. This is simple. It works.
The grid itself probably has had the least iteration and editing of like anything in the game. The actual like core mechanic, just like it divine inspiration sparked, and we were like, okay, everything else is built around this, and we have to make it fit into this thing because this is what we're. This is the thing that we're using. And we don't want to change it to fit something else. We'll change everything else to fit it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I think people get a little too fiddly with stuff sometimes, you know, they're like, oh, it has to be super clever or it has to have super options or whatever. And it's like, eh, sometimes it can be simple and you can build up from it. And this feels like one of those.
Both of us have worked on enough stuff that I think we both kind of have hit that point of like not being like super nervous about like the end product in like that way of like, I have to like fiddle with everything. Like it needs to be, you know, 100%. It's like, if it works, it works. Don't fuck with it.
And I also, from, you know, as a Mexico, tip my hat. There's a lot of bits in it. There's just enough meat on the bones of here are the mech frames, here are the weapons and stuff, where you could immediately start looking at it and go like, okay, but what if I wanted like a weapon that did this? Or what if I wanted to add this? What if I wanted to do this? And it's like, okay, well, you know, you take something that's kind of like that and you probably tweak it and then there you go.
That was a consideration when we were making the parts and stuff for like, we want to make something that if people want something else, they can make it without having to think too hard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is a big thing with like the way the parts are designed. It's like there are very few like shared keywords. Like it's mostly just like the attack types.
Mm-hmm.
Most everything else is like exceptional in the sense of like it's on the part. Like one thing that drives me nuts is like having to reference things too much. Like you have a big list of keywords and you have to go reference them.
Mm-hmm.
And avoiding that definitely does help that homebrew aspect. You can basically just write whatever on there and it's like, that's as valid a part as anything else.
Yeah. And the keywords thing is the thing I'm always aware of. My partner won't play a card game if she has to look up too many things.
Yep. That's
like,
fair.
Like, she would never play Magic because if I gave her a card that had like three keywords on it that didn't have the explanations of what those keywords are, she was just like, no, I don't,
yep.
I don't want to play with a glossary next to me. And I'm like, I get that. So we
perfectly
play,
fair.
We play other games and I hold the glossary.
That's also why on all the spreads with mechs on them, we have all the parts on the same page. So you can look at the mech and look at, you know, what comprises it. And also, you don't have to flip into the parts section to see what every weapon does. You can just literally print out that page and play from it.
Yep. That was the full intent. We were just like, yeah, we have these like big nasty builds. You're not supposed to like reconstitute it from scratch. Like just look at the page and just bookmark it and you're good to go.
Yeah.
That was a layout thing I noticed in the base section, which we'll get to, where the building is like, oh, you have access to these weapons now. Here are the weapons, right? Just down here at the bottom. We're just going to keep that right there, all nice and clean.
Yep.
Which made, like, as a read, it made it very digestible because it's like, okay, here are the what are the weapons? These. There you go. Don't worry about it. And then when you get to the base section and you're aware you're building multiple, like, you're building new stuff, like, you're really digging into the system, it's like, okay, here's where these things are. This is where these live. So that, you know, now you can become aware of the fact that you can get these.
One thing I was very cognizant with that construction section was the why do I give a fuck factor?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like when you have like a big nasty building that's like several things down the tech tree, you kind of have to know why you care. And like that was half of the purpose of that. It was like during that construction thing, it's like, why is this aspirational? Why do I want this building that's a pain in the ass to make so bad? Mm-hmm. And the answer is that it's right there and you can see why.
Mm-hmm. It lets you take revolvers. Oh, do I care? Maybe.
Yeah. But especially with the complex building, it's like, oh, it lets you take this like sick katana that has +3 accuracy and a five times crit.
Yeah.
Or not.
Someone on the table is going to be excited about that.
Exactly.
And I'm definitely the player in that game that would be like, okay, here we go. I'm gonna sketch it out. Next session. All right. Here's our build. We're gonna build this way. Here's everything we want in here. Here we go.
One thing I was also cognizant of is that I know that person does not exist in every group. That's why it's kind of easy to move the buildings around. Mm-hmm. Because you are not going to get it right the first time, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And with the amount of variables going into it, there's a lot going on.
I love it. I love it though. It's so, some of them are so specific and that's so fun. Like it gives very big like XCOM 2 vibes where it's like, okay, I can't build this building. I can only build this building on this sort of space. Okay, so I got to build this over here, which means this space that I have now, I'm going to build this sort of building. So that
XCOM is a consistent influence on both this and Apocalypse Frame, for sure.
It's such a good example of base building. I don't know how more people haven't ripped off just the nice clarity of design. So to go from a design that I'm like, this is brilliant, this is amazing, and I see it immediately, I want to talk about the Mission Hex Flower with something that I'm like, I know this is smart. This is great. I have no idea how this works. I read that section like three times and I have dyslexia. It's absolutely just that. I'm just like, okay. So let's talk about the Mission Hex Flower.
Yeah. So that's my child. So you start in the middle and you roll 2d6 and where you roll 2d6 determines where the next hex you go is. Each hex is keyed, so each hex has a specific event tied to the number of the hex, and you resolve that event in whatever way. It's mostly a roleplay thing, or it can start combat. That's how it'll introduce factions if there's factions involved. And then if you use an attribute to influence that, or you were engaged in combat, you add or subtract a number and roll another 2d6 and go from there somewhere else around the hex you're currently at. And you just kind of bounce around the map that way. I'm going to edit it for the final version so that there is a more static or like specific end state you can reach instead of just being like, okay, well, my goal was to do recon and I saw a bunch of people doing this, so I guess that mission's done. I want to make like a way to like concretely like decide. Yeah, that's where it's at now, and it's worked fine. I've played it. But also, some people don't like that. And I also am not sure if I'm a huge fan of not knowing when I get to stop. So I want to add an end state also so that there can be like a failure state, which when I tested it, we did fail in one way because we got into a combat and we're like, fuck, if we get into another combat, like we're going to be messed up. And we didn't do anything that we wanted to do for this mission, so I guess we're just done. We failed it. But yeah, I want to add like a specific condition of like, this is how it ends. This is when it ends. If you got what you needed, then good. If you didn't, well, too bad. But
one thing we've talked about a bit too is changing the directionality and the edges of the hex flower a little bit. Right now they just kind of wrap around. We kind of don't want to do that eventually.
Yeah, we think like going off the edge would basically be like the end state, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, so that's either ending or evacing or whatever.
And that could also be like influence how you are doing your actions, because if you do something in one way, you might be way more likely to go over the edge and finish the mission before, you know, you mean to.
But yeah, the point is that one is still more in flux than like the grid, for instance.
I was looking at it and I read what was in the book, and then I actually went and read what you put on your website about it, and it's that thing where I'm like there's something here, there's cool ideas, and it's not fitting together for me, and your explanation actually helped a ton of just like, okay, I see how we put these pieces together.
Yeah, the whole point of it was to basically be a step past just a list of random events you can come across and have it actually be like somewhat influenced by what you just did and what you're doing next. The list of events is very specific in how we arranged them so that they fit together where they are on the hex flower versus just being random, you know, randomly tossed in there. So like, if you're coming across a bunch of ships, then the hexes around coming across a bunch of ships are going to be related to that versus just, you know, you did this and you did that and now, oh my god, there's a bunch of ships and now there's no more ships anymore. Where'd they go?
That is the big advantage of using a hex flower. It has history. It knows where you are and it knows everything next to it.
Yeah.
So you can design around that, and we did.
And it probably helps a lot with, like you were saying, wanting it to be a GM-less game.
Yep.
You don't need somebody to come up with, oh, what's the next thing that happened? What's the NPC that comes up? Who, you know, whatever. It's, hey, somebody shows up. All right, well, hang on. Let me roll. Oh, it's this person. There you go. Which I'm interested to see a lot of developers bring back roll tables and randomness in this way, because I feel like sort of the early wave of story games was very specific about like these things happen and then, you know, just come up with what happens in that way of just like, you'll get it because you're smart, you know, and then
the rest of that owl.
Right. And people were like, I don't, what's supposed to happen? I don't know. And I'm excited to see game designers take a little bit more control over that section and be lead it in specific ways and even saying, hey, it can be this or this, you know, yep. but choose this and then be able to introduce that randomness as well. Especially for GMless stuff, because it just means, hey, I rolled 2d6. It's a 17. What does the table say on 17? Boom. That's it. That's what we're doing. Let's keep it rolling. That leads great into my next question. So this is a crunchy game. I think this is fair to say. I think there's a lot of bits. There's a lot of dice rolling, and even for a GMless game, like I think this is the crunchiest GMless game I've come across. That's like just short of a board game.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
That's how I like it. And
I think there's a lot of conversations we had about crunch versus fluff versus blah, 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 blah. And a lot of it is just people saying a lot of stuff.
There is.
How do I want to phrase this? In designing the game, how are you making sure that the crunch felt fun? Because I think the cool thing about this, like talking about the grid, talking about the hex flower, like the crunch feels good. You know, it doesn't feel burdensome. It doesn't feel like you're going to get bogged down. It doesn't feel like you're stuck in a bunch of weird player options. But it has that feel of, you know, I'm going to spend 5 minutes sitting there before we go on a mission deciding, do I want to take this weapon? Do I want to take this? Do I want to... Or, you know, or having downtime actions like, do I want to upgrade my frame? Do I want to, you know, or we want to do a building? How did you keep that, you know, contained?
Well, for me, it's because I make games that I want to play. And if I don't want to play it, if I don't want to do this, if I think this wouldn't be fun, I won't put it in. Because it's, I want to play my games. That's why I make them. I make them because they're filling a gap of games of, I don't find a game that, you know, suits me for this genre. I'm making the game for it. That's the whole reason I made Daisy Chainsaw, is I wanted a magical girl game, and I didn't find one that I liked. So, I just, if it's burdensome to me, then I don't want to play it, and I don't want it in my game.
Yep. No, I definitely agree with that, and I'm same. A big thing for me is that, like, I really got into indie design through, like, Lumen, for instance, which is very intentionally, like, just fucking do the thing. Very, like, concise, and just, like, a power needs to be one sentence. Like, just make it happen. And of course, obviously, it's a little scaled up from that, but nonetheless, like, that same influence of, like, it needs to be discreet enough to live on its own still kind of lives there, like, in my head when I'm designing anything. Like, again, this comes back to, like, the I don't like referencing keywords thing. It's like, I want a thing that does what it says it does. And, like, ultimately, if you're designing everything around that, it's not going to be too burdensome, usually.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, if you can take the mechanic out and place it somewhere else and it's still usable, I like that. Like, with the Mission Hex Flower, I actually described it to Snow, and she's going to be using it for Dot Dungeon for her questing booklet. Because it just works. It just works for quests too, you know? It doesn't have to be missions. Mm-hmm. It can work for MMO quests, which is really fun to me. But it could just basically extract it whole cloth and just, you know, erase the mech parts and add in fantasy parts, and suddenly it's a whole new thing. And I like that as being like, it's just its own thing that we've flavored to be in this because it's fun to yep. use.
It is very, yeah, it's that very separable, like, modular design that really helps. Because, like, if each of those parts can stand on their own, then that means none of them is, like, too much of a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not referencing everything at the table, everything in the book, all at once, always.
Exactly.
You're like, here's the shit I gotta worry about right now. And then when yep. we get to it later, we'll get to that part.
And a lot of it is, like, a lot of the more complex stuff is very opt-in, too. Like, that is a thing where, like, if you don't want to deal with some of the nastier shit, you just don't have to. It's like, just don't. Just don't take that on your mech. I don't know.
You don't want to think about missile deployment. Don't take missiles.
How do missiles work? Jerry, don't take missiles. Just don't.
Sometimes you do have to think about it a little bit with enemies, but, like, it's not that bad usually. If you don't
have to control the enemy that has the missiles, make someone else do it. That's how we usually control enemies in like playtesting and stuff, is divvy them up between the players, so you can only control yourself and you control like two enemies. And every time I've played it, we end up attacking our own mech and no one else, because we don't want to like inflict damage on someone else's mech, so we just have our two enemies we're duking it out with.
That's great.
That's very polite of you.
I was gonna say, it's very nice. I'm just like, well, I'll just attack me, because everybody else is having a rough day, so I'll just...
That's just what ends up happening whenever I play, is like, we're like, oh, well, it wouldn't be kind of rude if I just, like, blasted you with something? Like, maybe I'll do it to myself. I don't know why it happens, it just does.
I know I'm tiny and can dodge, so I'll just attack me, don't worry about it.
This is true, I love light frames.
That is another thing, too, about the GMless approach. One thing is that you don't run into, like, a tactics mismatch between players and GMs. Mm. Which I think a lot of tactical games can run into, where, like, the GM is, like, a fucking expert at this shit. And the player's like, I made a normal fighter.
I have two shotguns. And the GM is like, yeah. I have 87 missiles.
Exactly. It's like the GM comes up with this, like, super, like... souped up build, and the player's just like, I made the default.
I printed out the page, so, and it showed up.
So basically, if you're controlling the enemies, you have exactly as much tactical acumen as, you know, your character. So it's a pretty even match.
Yeah.
That sniper looks really scary. Give him to Jerry. Jerry doesn't know how to play this game. Just
exactly. There you go.
Yeah, well, you gotta pick somebody. You know, you gotta pick a name, and all you can do is not pick the name of somebody that's around. That's the only rule, is it can't be somebody around.
Everyone hates Jerry at the game days. Damn.
Or they like him, because he's not good at attacking them. One of those two.
Yeah, everybody's like, get Jerry at my table, listen.
Mm-hmm.
He won't be very excited, but he can't roll for shit, so... so I and spawning off of that, I think of a fun consideration for these sorts of games, because I think in a lot of the same way as it's a thing that people talk a lot about but doesn't mean half of what they think it is like balance.
Mm-hmm.
And it came up a little bit already of like, you know, balancing such and such, and mostly in terms of the grid, but. How much consideration, how much time, how much effort, all of that, like, have you spent on balance? How much of that has been a concern in the design?
So what I tell people about balance is that balance is a tool. It is not an end. It is a means to an end. Like, so it's given consideration, but like, the play experience in general is more important than, like, making sure that, like, the fucking spreadsheets line up to me.
It more important is that it feels good.
Yes. By far.
if it doesn't feel good, but the numbers are all correct, then it's like, well, that's not fun. I'm playing this game for fun, not for math.
Yep. I see this a lot of, like, very, like, balance concerned, like, especially, like, people who are, like, optimizers making their own, like, you know, class or whatever in D&D, where it's, like, all the math works in it, but the concept is not 100% there. Mm-hmm. Or, like, it involves way more, like, mechanical fiddling than it does, like, actual fiction or, like, feel. Mm-hmm. And that feel is way more important. That feel is what gets people coming back to the table. It's not the balance. Mm-hmm. As long as your game is, like, playable. Of course. And, you know, you know. But I'm not saying don't balance the game, but it's not... It's a means to an end.
Yeah, the most important thing about balance to me is... I want everyone to be on, like, an even playing field with their builds. I don't want one person to outshine everyone else just because they took the right things that they knew were the right things, which is why, like, it's important to me, especially when you first make a character, that you have choices to make. Like, there's choices that have actual meaningful implications for how your character plays and what your character can do, and that makes them different from other characters. That doesn't mean that there's one character who does everything really well and no one else can really shine a light to them. So that's what the most important part about balance to me is, just like, I want it I want all your choices to be meaningful and not just deciding, is this the good thing or is this the bad thing?
Yeah, I think like you said, feel is a lot of it. And I think that's what people miss, is that if you just look at it as, you know, numerically, like I'm a big proponent of in, you know, D&D is a great example. My favorite D&D editions, 4th edition, I think they cooked the hell out of that game. And a lot of it is because an enemy does not look the same as a player character. And yes. I don't think enemies, combatants, obstacles, however you want to phrase it, should look and use the same math and use the same terms and use the same verbs as player characters. Because an enemy, an obstacle, a combatant, whatever, is interested and concerned with different things.
Yep. No, you know, even in Celestial Bodies, where they do use a lot of the same language, it's not 100% the same. Mm-hmm. So, like, for instance, like, you have, like, minion, standard, and elite enemies, which, yes, I've read 4th edition.
I saw minions, I literally went, yes!
I mean, they're not the same thing, but nonetheless, it's the same principle, where it's, like, lesser, you know, normal, greater. The closest thing to parody is an elite enemy, and even then, it's not real parody. Like, they have, like, something that approximates your attributes, but it's not the same. And that's that same principle.
Track of, if every enemy had attributes, it'd be crazy.
Mm-hmm. A, it's a huge pain in the ass. That's huge. But B, it's also the same thing where it's like, okay, well, you gotta get into 2 or 3 fights in this mission, and he's gotta get into 1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
not an equal thing going on here.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was intimating with, is just like a player character has so much more that they're worried about in any game, and a monster doesn't. A monster's like, dog, I'm gonna die because that's the purpose of this encounter. Is y'all are gonna beat me up, and so what can I do in the meantime?
Yep, especially in a D&D context, it's like, yes, most encounters are not there to kill you. They're there to, like, wear you down. As, well, in, like, 3rd through 5th edition or whatever. Right, we're going to ignore the whole, like, OSR thing. That's its own thing. But, yeah, like... that's the thing. You then have to build an encounter around that, and you have to build it around, oh, like, what is this encounter supposed to do? And it's like, is it just supposed to wear down a quarter of your resources, so after 4 of them, you need to rest? And it's like, is that the most exciting design in the world? Maybe not. Which is why most people in 5th edition usually run one big encounter and then rest.
Right. And it's like, well, that's, I'm done.
Cool. Yeah, that's the thing. They want to use all their cool shit. Like, so, you know, who among us?
Right, yeah, who am I? Who am I to say? But I think that's where a lot of, like, the balance conversation comes from, is like, well, the monster does 17 points of damage and I do 5, and I'm like, and it's like, well, yeah, but there's four of you. Yep. And I remember a good number of years, the years I spent running D&D Adventures League, D&D Lair Knights, Lair Assault, Larisalt was great. God, Larisalt was good. They should do Larisalts. And then the near decade I spent doing Pathfinder Society, you really start to learn what things to care about on you know, the big bad fight at the end of just like, oh, it's an evil cleric. Oh, he has like this first level. He's never going to cast that first level spell. I'm not even going to worry about that. I'm not even going to worry about that. I'm going to cast this big third level spell. I'm going to try to hit as much people as I can. And then by the time I have my next turn, we'll see if I'm alive.
List of spells on enemies in D&D is the worst fucking shit. Nobody will ever read that. There's like one of those that matter. They have three rounds to live.
I just saw a blog post that was like, the reason 4th edition was great was because they didn't have spell lists. They just had the abilities and they just did the shit. And I was like,
that's right.
Yes, you are correct.
Like they designed the game or something.
I use my breath weapon on a 5 or 6. I recharge. Oh, you're fucked. I got it again. Oh, well. Too bad.
In Daisy Chainsaw, one of my favorite parts about Daisy Chainsaw is that the enemies roll the same dice you do. So in Daisy Chainsaw, you roll a number of hits, and that how many hits you get is how much damage you do. And dice can explode, which will add more hits if you get hits with the explosions, and they'll just explode infinitely. But the enemies roll those the same numbers. So you can either get like whacked, like, you know, one hit from a big boss, or you can have a little guy who just happened to explode his dice 5,000 times and you just die instantly. And I, and that's what I like about that system that I did, because I was like, I want it to be funny.
Yeah, that's fun. That's hilarious. That's fun.
People like crits for that reason. Like, it's surprise. Surprise is comedy.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know.
It's really funny when the little dude crits and kills you. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
This is also a thing with Total Effect, which is the system that built Out in Horizon on. Enemies are just based on what they roll. So it's like, that enemy can just roll triple sixes and do triple its average damage on you. You have 10 health. Good luck, buddy.
Have fun.
Where's hell? Whoops.
That happened in my first playtest, and I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted to do.
One thing that happened in my playtest is Daisy Chainsaw, which I don't think this is, I don't know if it's possible anymore. Someone rolled the most amount of hits I had ever seen for an attack that didn't actually do damage.
That's great.
Because it was an attack that's like, oh, you trap them in a... It was, bubble gun, and you trap them in a bubble, but you still rolled to hit, because you just need one hit to make sure it hit them. They rolled, like, so many hits, and we were just like, well?
What does this mean?
Where are we going with this?
You're trapped in a bubble so good, no other change to the spell, they're just, you know, lots of bubbles got them.
They're trapped in just more bubbles.
They can still pop it, though, and all the bubbles will pop, and they'll be fine, but you did get a lot of hits, congratulations.
Oh, that's great. I do love that. I'm
screenshotting it and pinning it in the channel.
Definitely Celestial Bodies has like very generous crits for a lot of weapons. Like, like a 3x crit with a sword will kill half of everything.
Yeah.
Like just straight.
And if your teammate is someone who hits a lot of squares, like they're getting a lot of explosives and you're running around with a sword, that's over. It's just over.
Yeah, there's great teamwork there, where it's like someone can set you up for a really nasty crit there.
Yeah. I love it. That's fun, though. That's mech fiction, baby!
Yeah,
it's
even,
great.
Even when I like, my solo game of Celestial Bodies that I plan on eventually getting off the ground, I have three mechs, and they're all built so that they can kill that guy. Kill him.
One, and then two, and then three, and then you're dead.
Yeah.
The true TTRPG player experience, the solo game I'm going to do eventually. Just as soon as I get the scheduling, as soon as we get the scheduling together, I will finally do my solo game. Never.
Bodies binder for the people, for the people in the chat who can see.
I love it's the most, like, ninth grade Trapper Keeper.
Oh yeah, I got this for $5. It was on clearance because no one's starting school in February.
And, I love it.
I love that you can tell where the faction section is.
Yeah, because you see the tabs, and there's like a huge gap of like, here's a tab, then here's all the factions, and here's the next tab.
Yep.
I don't have it written down, but this is, I mean, this seems like a great thing to dig into. The setting for celestial bodies, you know, you can talk for as long as you want about the mechanics. But let's talk about the setting. What's going on? What's up with all these factions?
Well, Earth exploded and everyone kind of drifted off. And 100 years later, their insular communities have to interact with each other to get resources. And these insular communities have been affected by space and the resources available to them and the lives they led when the lives their great great grandparents led when they were still on Earth and what they brought with them onto the ships that they took off from. Because essentially, a lot of the home ships are just repurposed space cruise ships. That was the vision in my head, is like, these were luxury ships that people just kind of were like, well, fuck, we have to leave. What can we shove a bunch of people on, like sardines? All our luxury cruise ships. My favorite faction is the Scavengers, and I like them because they're like a loose collection of home ships, one-off ships, spaceports. I made a menu for a spaceport called Hazy Station. Like a diner inside Hazy Station that had a bunch of like extra stuff on it. And I love that little menu. It was for the menu jam some time ago. And so the Scavengers are my favorite because I just really like the vibes of people who came together because they scavenge. They have to find the materials they need to fix their mechs, and they scavenge off ships, they scavenge off each other, they scavenge off, you know, anyone who decides to attack them, because usually the scavengers in my head are pretty peaceful. They're not trying to kill other ships.
They're scavengers. They're scavengers. Not like fighters.
But if people start attacking them, you know, they'll attack back, and, you know, they win. Look, they got more resources. Look at this giant mech they destroyed that they can take the metal off of and melt it down to fix their own mechs, you know?
So my thing with the factions, and a lot of them are designed partially by us and partially by like backers of the initial IT fund. So for a lot of them, we got concepts and like, you know, I would write them out as something else. Or something like close enough. Like I made it work for the setting. The big thing is that I wanted to impress with a lot of them is that a lot of them are just reactions to this five generations old trauma. Of just like, you know, we have just been unmoored, now what? And, you know, I kind of mentally subdivided each of them into like four categories. One of them is just survivalists. That's your scavengers, your people who just like found various ways to get by, like no matter what. One of them is mercenaries, people who are like, I need to find a way to make myself useful to everyone else to live.
That makes sense.
One of them is imperialists, which is like, I'm going to react to this by getting as much as I can. And the last one is cults. Just people who just like went full, like, especially when they hit the Titans, they're just like, okay, this is why I am going to make this make sense now.
I'm going to make this my whole personality for everyone on this ship.
That makes a lot of sense. Oh, I found this big thing in space. Oh, that's God, I guess. That's exactly. Sure. That makes sense.
Exactly. No, that's reasonable.
Yeah, I get that.
But yeah, just think of them in that context of like, I don't want to just, like, sit down a lore Bible and just say, like, this is what's happening in the setting. I want to show you the people, and I want you to kind of bounce that lore Bible off yourself based on what you see, for the most part. Like, part of this is that, like, we don't define what happened to Earth. That is a pointed thing.
Something.
Now, we have two supplements who do, but in the most part, we do not define what happened to Earth. And part of that is that that's kind of what you take to it. And that's going to inform how you, like, think about those factions. Like, because they are all informed by that and by what they've hit along the way. And, like, what they've done to each other and to themselves along the way.
And knowing that a lot of it was from the Itch Fund makes a lot of sense. Just because there'd be a couple that I'm like, well, this is kind of silly. Like, well, how did we get here? And then it's like, oh, somebody probably just wrote like Space Witch or something. And it's like, oh, okay, that tracks.
Yeah, but it's like, beyond that, it's like things, reality is silly is the thing I tell people. Like, people do stupid shit all the time in real life, or like stuff that like doesn't necessarily make sense, but is like, you know, it maybe it's like kind of silly to you, but it's not silly to them. And it's like they can
it's internally consistent.
Yes, everything comes from something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And so, you know, that's part of why I like to lean into like even some of this, you know, things that you would say like don't necessarily fit a mech setting. It's like, fuck it, we're doing it.
I don't know. I mean, there's factions, there's groups of people in real life everywhere who are like, yes, this thing is my personality, or you know, like fandoms, the whole mm-hmm. like everything. There's so many silly groups of things where people are like, this is what makes me get up in the morning, and to other people it's like, well, that's weird, and then to them it's like, no, this is actually important to me. And in Celestial Bodies, that might be the weird body that floats outside your home ship and speaks to you at night.
Yeah. It's a little different when they talk back sometimes.
Yeah.
It does seem, that is very actionable. That is very
it's actionable. A little more like, yeah, you can reasonably make a cult off of this, like when it works. Like,
what's your guys' cult? Oh, we found like a big space rock. And you know, it seemed chill. What's your guys' cult? Oh, we found like the dead body of a Titan, and when we dream it like sings its prayers to us, and it's like, oh, that's way more like, yeah, I would worship that too. Yeah.
I want to make a faction that's around space whalers, now that I think about it.
Sure.
Hell yeah. Because
there are space whales in the mission Hexflowers. There's space whales, and I'm like, I should just make a faction about space whalers, you know? That'd be fun.
You only meet them if you find the space whales. You gotta get lucky.
You gotta get lucky.
There you go.
I give you one harpoon if you don't fuck it up.
Don't miss.
Don't miss.
Don't miss.
They have big mouths.
Don't miss. It's very funny. It's the name of the mech, the don't miss.
That's a good name for a mech. I wonder, LF, don't miss.
You gotta make that an MN because it's got that plus accuracy and just like stack up everything else that gives you accuracy.
That's true. And MN is also not as easy to hit.
Yeah, it's true.
So, you know, don't miss them, and they won't miss you.
Oh, yeah, it cuts both ways. Cuts both ways. Don't miss. That's just, you know.
You know.
That's a statement.
If you miss, I'm not. if you miss,
I'm not missing. Yeah, don't miss. Yeah, that's as much a creed for me as it is a warning for you. Like, don't miss. Don't.
Just don't miss.
Yeah, just don't. Listen, the combat's real easy. Just don't miss. Why are you missing? Stop missing.
I'm always telling people it's a skill issue.
Just don't miss. just don't miss. So Celestial Bodies is really interesting to me. And it's a thing that's come up like a few times in the interviews of because I interviewed a lot of people really quickly for Zine Quest. The thing that came up a lot was one of the benefits that a lot of people saw in Zine Quest was being able to say, here's a game, here's a thing, it is complete, it is done, and being able to get it out the door. And I think Celestial Bodies is a really interesting connection with that. Something else that came up of the idea of being able to change and adapt and like edit the game after the fact. Was this part of the kind of idea going into making Celestial Bodies? Was it just like, well, we did it, but also what if we did more? Or like, what was the thoughts?
I think we always knew that our initial release probably wasn't going to be the final version. We just wanted to get like the minimum viable product out. Like, what is the game you can play with nothing else, just something you can play? And it got popular enough, you're like, okay, we should finish it. Like, we should add the things we want to finish it, or want to add to it, to make it a product where you can have the whole gameplay loop, you can have things you're working for, progression, you know, more stuff to tell the story. And that just is this kind of like we didn't yeah we never were gonna just release the base version, but it did grow. I mean, the Itch Fund, the Kickstarter is part of just how we were like, oh well, it actually, you know, people want to play it, so we're gonna feed that.
Yeah, it's like it was a little bit like, okay, I figured it would hit, but it hit like way more than we expected. So like, okay, we should probably like really think about like what the full like real ass like we take some time and think about this version of this looks like.
When is we joked about it earlier? Is this the final version? Is this do you and I guess insofar as like, is this the final version? Like, does that mean you're never coming back to it? Does that mean like Celestial Bodies is finito? Like, I have a what's next question, but I feel like this leads very cleanly into it.
I feel like we'll just keep making stuff for it, but we're not going to like the main book isn't going to be expanded by itself. Yep. Well, right. Because I have tons of ideas of stuff I want to add to it. Binary has ideas. We want to add to it, but we don't want to add to the core or what we already have planned.
The advantage of like the modular design, like we described, is that we can just like put an expansion out there or something, or like, you know,
put out a book of new parts that are themed around something. Like, we could just do that. It doesn't have to like have a bunch of extra information. It doesn't have to be.
This is kind of our approach with the supplements too, where it's like, here's just a new idea. Mm-hmm. You can use it or not. You know? Mm-hmm. And like, this is something that I have certainly done with my other games. I mean, I made an expansion for Valiant Horizon, and I'll probably make another at some point that's been kicking around. I'll probably come back to Apocalypse Frame at some point. But like, I want to make something that's like, the core is solid, and then you can build on that. And you know, if we do, we do, and if we don't, we don't. But we probably will.
it's interesting to talk to so many people, and it's how I know I'm getting a lot more comfortable with saying that like I'm not a creative person, like I don't have a creative brain, because talking with so many designers and stuff for this, you know, you get to this question of like, oh yeah, what's going on? And it's like, oh yeah, I have plans for this and this and this, and like, I'll probably do that. And just like, my brain does not work that way, you know? And just, and it's been very interesting to talk to so many people directly and be like, yeah, so like, what are you gonna, oh yeah, I got plans for this. Like, y'all are working. I love it.
The process of making almost anything is just like editing down.
Yeah.
Like making it like comprehensibly sized, like instead of it's going to be big already, but it could be bigger if we just put in everything, but it would also come out in a decade. So it's like, I want it to come out ever.
Yeah. We said the foreseeable future.
I'd like for it to be out. And then maybe also I'll come up with more psychic rules, but also it'll be out. Well, and then
the trouble with having something that hangs around for like decades too is that like, you know, you're not the same person at the end of a project and as at the beginning, and if it stays around too long, you start second guessing the early stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you come back to that, and then, you know, once you second guess that, you need to second guess the stuff you made next, and sooner or later you're just doing a complete rolling update of everything all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that doesn't help you either. So it's much better just have something like, set a scope and like stick to it. Like, even if the scope is big, set one, and like then you can add on to it later.
It's part of what I've enjoyed about talking to so many people is hearing everyone's like, I guess like ethos, I guess, is maybe a word that's maybe a little too grander, but is encompassing for so many just like thoughts and ideas and things that they're like, yeah, this is how I do this. This is how I do this. This is how I think of this. To get to what's next, you know, you have the Kickstarter now for the print run and the zines.
Yes.
After that, are you do you have anything cooking like individually? I don't mean specifically like celestial bodies, but is it you have that thing of like, okay, as soon as I get done with this project, now I can really, you know.
We have our second half of our collab.
Yeah, that's gonna happen at some point.
One day.
Eventually, maybe. Ever.
So when I originally pitched the collab, I was like, okay, you help me with this game and I'll help you with your game. Celestial Bodies hit like a truck, but we're still going to work on Anointed at some point, hopefully.
Yeah. It may or may not have that name, it may or may not have that concept, but we will get there.
It will. Some part of it will exist.
There will be a game, I promise, for the second half of that collab.
The second collab, and it'll be Binary idea-led and not my idea-led.
Yeah.
I love how... And this is like the second or third time this has come up. Like TTRPG designer collabs are like half business agreement and half like teenage love confession of just like, no, yeah, we're going to be joined together significantly for a significant period of time in every way.
Yeah.
The thing with Celestial Bodies is that I think both of us kind of underestimated the scope of what that was going to end up as.
We didn't know. We didn't know what we were getting into.
Like, especially with the Itch Fund, I was like, I had done the Valiant Horizon Itch Fund. It made like 2,800. I was like, okay, sure. It'll probably make like 3,000 something. It made 8,700. So I was like, oh, okay. Fuck. All right.
People like Max.
People like Max. They do like Max.
I keep saying this. They are so horny for Max. Oh my god.
We're doing. Mexico's are eating good right now. We're living. Things are
Mexico's
going great.
Are always good. They are having the times of their lives.
We're doing all right. They made a new armored core. They're probably going to make another one because that one sold really well.
I hope so.
Battletech is back. Mechassault is back.
Is Megasalt back? Really?
Yeah.
Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
They just had a new Megasalt game come out. I feel like nobody talked about it, but it came out. They made it.
There's also a game I downloaded, which is mech like make your own mech waifu, basically, but it's called Mecha Break. It's like the beta is out. And
that's not what I thought you were gonna say. That's correct. That's a correct statement, but that's not where...
Yeah, Mecha Break, but all my friends are playing it as a way to make their mech waifu kill lots of people.
That's not wrong.
Yeah, no, it's not an incorrect way, because I remember watching my friend play the beta
made
of it.
A female version of Char Aznable named him Charlene, Charlene Aznable, because I took Charlotte.
It's very funny.
Wow. Charlene Aznable.
That's very funny. That game does, the match does very specifically start with like a really horny cutscene.
Yeah,
the waifu and getting into the mech. Like,
look, they know what they're doing.
Eject when you eject from the mech.
Yeah, they like. I remember watching my friend play that. I was like, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, like, they know what they know who their fans are. Yeah, like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I get it. I'm not poo-pooing anybody's fun, but it's just like, oh, all right, okay, yeah, it's
yeah.
Spend more time in that character creator than you think you're gonna. Oh my gosh, I we did it. I think this is it. So that means it's time for the three question. So what's fun is there's two of you, so that makes the three question easier. So the three questions is the thing I do at the end of every episode. At the end of the first episode, I ask my guests who her like top three podcast guests would be. And just every episode I've been like, oh yeah, top three, whatever. And I come up with it during the episode. And it's just meant to be a silly sort of lead out. Gosh, I was planning on being like three favorite mechs, but that's not going to be a viable question, as we've learned.
Hold on, let me do some research really quick.
Oh my gosh. my three favorite mechs are Char Aznable.
The Gundam.
Yeah, the Gundam. Gosh.
The Gurren.
We haven't. Yeah, the Lagan. I don't like the Gurren as much, but I like the Lagan.
Yeah.
And then you just end the call.
I gotta go.
Yeah, elaborate on that. No.
Yeah. Gurren and Lagan, those are my first two.
Gosh. I mean, there are multiple stages. We're not gonna get into it. We're not gonna get into it. Oh my gosh. This was tricky because nothing really came up for me to latch on to for this question.
Favorite weapons, favorite frames of Celestial Bodies, maybe.
I mean, sure. I want to hear your favorite shit in your game, like, regardless. That is my favorite. Like, I love hearing the person who designed the thing talk about, like, their favorite bits of the game. That's cool. Tell me who your favorite child is.
My favorite two frames are, well, I have to pick a third, but I love the Light Flash, I love the Ultra Flash, and the third would probably be, I don't even know. One of the Titan, I like the Mushroom Titan frame.
That's a good one.
What does he do? Hang on.
The Mushroom Titan, is that in the book yet?
Yeah, it's in the book.
Okay, I can't remember, because I don't even know if I've read through all the factions recently. I don't remember anything.
Did we put that in the book, or did I just write down the words Mushroom Titan?
That was a backer, Justin Vandermeer backs that, but the Mushroom Mech, I don't even remember what it does. I just remember.
I got it up right here.
Okay, tell me.
It basically infects enemies with spores.
Oh, that's what, yeah, that's what I thought. Because I had a gif of, like, how it would work.
Yep.
Yeah. Those are my top three mechs in Celestial Bodies.
All right. Let's see. If I'm picking mechs...
I want it to be known this isn't the top three question. I just came up with it, actually.
Oh, that's fair.
I just thought of it. I just want to hear what your favorite mechs are.
Okay, sure. Fine.
More questions.
Well, I have many times expressed my bias toward light mechs, so definitely Light Flash and Light Nerve are probably my favorites. I'm a big fan of Medium Flash. Medium Flash is the most, like, basic motherfucker mech, but it's such a workhorse. Mm-hmm. I love it. Like, its special ability is it has armor when it's medium. That's it. Like,
gets the job done.
It gets the job done.
That's the thing I remember when I was playing Armored Core, was a lot of people were like, oh yeah, you play like the super ultralights and you whip around and all of this. And I was like, yeah, but I don't get to have any weapons. I want missiles. I want, like, big chunky guns.
Yeah, Armored Core is very tilted toward light because it wants you to be fast. like all the rating is, like, based on speed. So, yes.
Makes sense.
You know.
But we're going to adapt the three questions slightly because there's two of you. And so asking six things feels like that would be a lot. So we're going to adjust it slightly. So each of you have one answer. So who is, other than the other person, who is someone, who's your top pick for, like, dream design collab? Like, pie in the sky.
Already collabed with.
No, it just can't be each other. It can be somebody you've already collabed if you're like, oh, I have this idea and this would be really fun. It just can't be each other. You can't cheap out and be like that game we already said we were going to make.
Well, mine would be Snow, because I already work with her a lot and we already vaguely collab on things. And we're also working on something together, but we work together on a lot of things. Which isn't really a pie in the sky thing, but I remember when I first met her, one of the things I said was, like, do you want to do a collab? And then they just kind of went, like, we just work on stuff together all the time. And she's, like, one of my favorite people to collab with on anything ever. if it was someone I haven't collabed with, I guess I can't, you said one answer, but I'll have a second answer.
No, listen, that's, everybody does that to me all the time. I'll be like, yeah, three answers, and I'll be like, is it okay if I say more? And I'm like, what do you think I'm going to do?
you know what, actually, probably, So what I would like to collab with one day would be, oh, I don't know how to pronounce it, Excellent Press.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's so cool.
I think it's Excellent.
Yeah, Excellent. Excellent. I don't know what you said.
I think it's Excellent.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent Press. He did send me some coffee he had lying around that was the Pursued by a Bear blend, and I've been drinking it lately. Because his Discord username is Pursued by a Bear. He's in the Atopia Discord server.
It's the same Shakespeare thinking. It's Excellent Pursued by a Bear. Like, Exit Pursued by a Bear. It's from the same Shakespeare line.
Yeah. And, yeah, I'd like to collab with him. I should probably tell him that, because I can just do that. But, you know, maybe when I have time. Maybe when I have time.
I do love the idea of, like the person I would really like to collab with is this person. I could ask him. Just, like, that's a thing I could do. That's great. That's perfect. Then you can be the change.
When I have time in 2027, I'll pencil it in.
I love it.
Yeah, so on a similar note of someone I have kind of half collabed with already, I trade ideas back and forth with Spencer Campbell all the time of Hila RPGs. I would love to do a proper collab. Like, I actually did a little writing on Loot, so that's fun, but I would like to do more. That would be great. We definitely have a lot of the same priors. One of the funny things about Anointed, which is the project that, in theory, that Charlotte and I are going to work on after this, which may be something else. It may be a video game by the time we start working on it. I don't know. I'm not kidding about that.
That'd be sick. I love that's my fit. That is the sort of thing why I love doing this podcast. Where it's like, how did you start doing this? Like, okay, so I wrote a poem once, and then let's go.
Yeah. In this case, it was more, I was losing my fucking shit in the month before Celestial Bodies, and I was like, I need something to distract myself, so I started building it out as one. So, like, that may exist as that at some point.
I love that.
But anyway, aside from that, I brought that up because, for a reason. I brought that up because he was making Rune at the same time I was making that, and the part of the reason I abandoned it was we had so many of the same priors on that project that it was looking very similar. And I was like, I didn't want to make the same fucking thing.
Let's not make them right next to each other.
Right. It's like we both came up with the same idea of, like, an area clock, for instance, at the same time, independently. Of just like, yeah, that's a thing we should have. It's just like, fuck, all right. So it would be nice to do, like, a proper collab. Another one is Will Yopst. I love all their shit so much.
Yeah, oh my god. Great.
I also think that
I haven't had the time.
Collabs in tabletop games do not happen as much as they should. I think there should be more collabs. I see a lot of people. I've had people ask me, like, oh, how was collabing? Like, how do you feel about it? I'm like, I love it, and I think you should do it too.
Yeah, so, like, people get scared of
not solo devving. Or, yeah, they get scared of not solo devving and, like, having to work with your ideas with someone else. And I'm like, it's great, though. It's so cool. I don't have to do everything myself.
You do have to give up some of that, like, complete author control, but it's good.
I like doing that, though.
It's such a good problem to have, because you are not going to do the same shit you always do.
Yes.
Yeah, and everybody that I've talked to who... you know, either it was something that they worked on with somebody else or talking about that project, they're so over the moon about it. Because I think it's so fun. You know, as a person who gets excited about stuff and gets to tell people about it sometimes, it's so fun to be excited about a thing and tell a person about it, and that person is equally as excited.
Yep.
And then just what if the thing that we were excited about was the game that we were making? There you go. That's how that whole experience sounds, and that rules. But yeah, I think it's super fun to think about in the TTRPG design space, like, who you would work with, who you think has, like, ideas and design ideas that, like, you would fit really well together with. Because it's super fun. I said this the last time this sort of question came up. It is super fun as a person who does not do that and is just a fan of TTRPGs and all of this to see, you know, two designers I like be like, we're doing a thing together. Here it is. It's just like, holy shit. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
I do love seeing it as well as being it.
Part of what I want to do with this podcast, and I'm not happy 2025 is the trash fire that it is, but I feel like it is helping me lean into the idea of just like be excited about shit, man.
Ooh, I'm gonna be doing a cover for Nova's mech tabletop game.
Hell yeah.
Good.
Hell great. Yeah.
I'm like, oh no, now I'm a mech artist. Now people want me to draw mechs. Fuck.
Oh no. Oh, I'm gonna have to look at a mech. Oh no.
Put a robot online. Pinterest. Give me mechs.
Shit. No, they're gonna be all AI mechs now.
No, it's fine. I have a mech board from pre-AI times.
A mech board from pre. Charlotte, Charlotte got bad news for you. I hate to break this to you. You might like mechs.
I love mechs.
Yeah, you might. I mean, maybe you should watch like a mech show or play a mech video game or something. I don't know.
I'm playing the mech waifu game.
That's
the PvP mech waifu.
You got me. You did. That's true.
It's a two oil streak tears streak down his face. He loved Big Mac.
Incredible. I think that's where we have to end it. I think that's the perfect place. I think trying to continue after that, we would just be trying to recapture something. Binary Charlotte, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for making time out of your busy schedule. If you want to give everybody just a little synopsis on, you know, Kickstarter, where to find you, all that jazz. Binary, you go first.
Absolutely. So you can go to binarystar.game/celestial. That is going to point to our Kickstarter, which is still live right now. Probably live if you're hearing this.
Gotta hope so.
Also, you can redirect. You can change that link binary later to just redirect to the itch page.
There you go.
Genius.
Probably what I'm going to do. But for now, right now that goes to the Kickstarter. Again, I've said this all weekend. I've said this all last week. Back my fucking Kickstarter. Do it.
I did it because I was like, it hasn't made, so I'm not going to wait till the 48 hours. I'm going to get it in now and help push that number.
So get that number across the fucking line, please.
I love it. I love the energy.
You could find me on the woods. Or in fragrant.garden is my like blog website, I guess. If you want to find me elsewhere, just think about it really hard and I will contact you psychically. You'll know.
Yeah, I just tell people, just Google me. My SEO is good enough.
If you Google Celestial Bodies or Daisy Chainsaw, you'll find the itch pages eventually. And then from there you can find Discord links, and from those Discord links you can find me, so you can do it. I believe in you.
Look, are you dead or not? Come on, figure it out.
I've had people find my book, like buy my book Daisy Chainsaw from a store without knowing who I am, and through that somehow find me and then find my email and email me about it, so I trust you.
If you can find the itch page, you enter your address and then I'll send you the ancient scrolls, and once you decipher the ancient scrolls you'll receive the premonition. The premonition will lead you to the forest. In the forest, I shall be waiting by the pond.
Exactly.
And then I will give you a Kickstarter package. That's how you get your copies.
Yeah.
But no, this was wonderful. Again, thank you so much for spending time. But that's going to be it. Say bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Another interview done, another episode completed. I want to once again thank Binary and Charlotte for making time to sit down to talk with me about Celestial Bodies. All of the links to their socials, the Kickstarter, everything like that will be in the show notes, as well as always, everything we talk about. I spent a good amount of time on the show notes, so I hope they're helpful for people that don't know, you know, if we mention a movie or a TV show or a creator or something. I hope you find something interesting in there that excites you. Celestial Bodies, once again, is on Kickstarter for roughly 2 weeks by the time you hear this. Please go check it out. see if it interests you enough to pledge, to back, to get a physical, to get a digital, to go, at the very least, go follow Binary's itch page and go follow their socials, all of that stuff. Even just going and reposting a post about the Kickstarter, doing follows before something launches can have a really big effect. And hey, while you're on social media, why don't you go ahead, go follow the show and maybe me. I have a couple really exciting interviews lined up over the next maybe month or so. But I'm also kind of struggling with the amount of work this is taking, you know, to be perfectly honest, making this podcast takes just enough work that if I get, you know, more than a couple interviews lined up, it can really start to be a drain. And then interviews come out on top of each other. And I feel like that's bad, you know, both for you as a listener and then for the people who are on the show who are talking about their thing, who I'm ostensibly trying to drum up support for. And I guess there's really no perfect answer to that when you're doing this sort of show, but I don't know. If you have any thoughts, any ideas, anything like that, feedback@mattcalder.com. You can send me any comments, questions, concerns you have about the podcast. And as always, thank you for listening, thank you for rating, thank you for, you know, following on social media, backing the Patreon, anything like that. But I have a headache, so I'm gonna go lay down, and I'll see y'all in the next one.